Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We enter the 11 o'clock hour here on the Pomp and Joe Show. Bob Pompiani with Jason Mackey in studio today. Joe Starkey is enjoying a day off. Want to remind you, the Fan Twitter site is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Also, the Fan text line. If you don't get in on the call-in line, all you have to do is go there. It's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you. Jason, we have a very special guest coming on with us right now, a man who knows everything there is to know about college sports in general, Mike DeCourcy. Of course, a man from Pittsburgh, I'm proud to say, a Point Park College and now University alum, and he does work on the Big Ten Network. We've had him on the Showdown. He knows a lot about this whole topic of the college football playoff. Good morning, and hope you had a nice holiday. Mike, how are you?
Good morning, Bob. Happy holidays to you. Happy New Year to everybody. Great to talk to you.
All right, we're going to get into this. I know there's a lot of debate about how this whole thing is going right now. 12 teams. I endorsed that at the time. I thought it was good. I don't know if I like the seeding process of it. If you are looking at this the way it unfolded, what changes would you make to it, knowing that teams like Boise State got a better opportunity, and maybe a team like Oregon, which was the number one seeded team?
Yeah, there's only one change I'd make to this, Bob, at current. There might be some subtle adjustments I'd make, but the first significant change I would make, I would also make to the NFL playoffs, and that is winning a conference or a division gets you in. That's your reward for winning your conference. But if you win a poor conference or a meager conference, or as in the case of the NFC, look what's going to happen in a week or so, where the loser between Minnesota and Detroit,
yeah,
in regards to the division, will have to go on the road
as a 14-team win. Right. That's crazy.
It's the same thing in football. It shouldn't happen in college. It's the same thing in college football. It shouldn't happen. I think it's wonderful. I think it's essential that Arizona State and Boise State and Clemson were part of this playoff. It's not a real playoff unless they are. But they don't have to be seeded with advantages, as when they clearly are not among the 3 to 4 best teams in the country, or the most accomplished, however you want to gauge it. They don't rank in either of those circumstances, and yet there they are sitting with significant advantages over teams like Tennessee or Texas or whomever you want to name. I think that if the committee's going to seed these teams, then they should be seated relative to their accomplishments, not granting an automatic bye and high seed to conference champions.
Mike, James Franklin talked at the Fiesta Bowl about wanting to see a commissioner for college football. I thought it was a really interesting topic of conversation, specifically with the timing of things. Obviously, Penn State being affected with Bo Prabula, easy for me to say, entering the transfer portal. Anyway, do you anticipate, do you see any path forward for a commissioner of college football? Is that even the least bit realistic, or is it just a good line in a press conference?
Yeah, it's a dream. People always want to fix whatever's wrong in sports by having a commissioner or a better commissioner or whatever. We haven't had, like, there's never been an authoritarian commissioner. Again, easy for me to say. There's never been
there's
that
something in the water.
Yeah, it's not that this person's going to come in and fix everything. First of all, what if they have bad ideas? I mean, James Franklin sat at that press conference and said they should eliminate conference championship games. Well, how are you going to know who the conference champion is then? Because you've got 18-team conferences, and we're not waiting a full year, everybody playing 20 games so that you can have a conference champion. So you have to have a championship game if you're going to have a legitimate champion. Should it be decided by who gets the easiest schedule? Because Texas, the reason Texas was in the SEC championship game playing Georgia was largely in part to the fact that they had one of the easiest schedules imaginable. That shouldn't be the factor. So you have to have those games. And that's why I say that his proposal, Nick Saban, as a college football commissioner, why would I want someone who got wealthy and famous in old college football to be ruling over new college football when we're clearly not going back in the direction that he would favor? So I don't think that a commissioner is the answer. I think that the answer is that either we live with what we have, or the college football players, the athletes, would have to be acknowledged as employees and there would have to be a bargaining agreement. It's one of those two, or congressional action, and I don't think that's coming.
I think there's stuff to do within the confines of the system that they're not doing too, Mike. Tell me if you think I'm crazy, but you can start this thing earlier. You can have a less compressed schedule. I honestly think it's to college football's detriment to have it spread out as far as it has, and like you're playing these games without students on campus. I would try to get away from the NFL if you can. That seems like a futile task at this point. Even Christmas Day they're trying to play games. I feel like they can get a little bit more creative than with the schedule and achieve some of that.
Well, I think they could probably make some adjustments to the schedule that would alleviate some of the pressures that happen relative to the transfer portal. But you would have that would entail playing games in August. And remember, the sport is most popular. It's popular everywhere, but it's most popular in the South. You don't want to be in a football stadium in a day.
That is
maybe
a good
even
point.
At night.
That is a good point.
In the South. So that's why it is how it is. It's hard enough for some of those day games in Mississippi and Alabama as it is, and to put them into an even hotter part of the year would be more difficult.
They all have to build domes.
I think you kind of have to live with this, again, relative to the transfer portal, because it comes down to the academic semesters. They're not going to change those so the football people are happy. So I don't know what way around that there is.
Mike DeCourcy, our special guest here from the Sporting News, Big Ten Network. Mike, I want to ask you, since you brought up transfer portal and how it relates to this, college football championship. We've already seen in the case of Bo Prebula, a guy who's very valuable, and you may not know his value until Drew Aller gets hurt, if he ever does. Hopefully he won't. But my point is, it does affect what goes on, given the timing. Would you change the way that's being handled? And my secondary question to that is there a written agreement here with these NILs? Or we saw the Leonard Hamilton being sued by six different people because of a verbal. What is NIL right now? Is it a contractual agreement, or is it just a verbal thing?
It is both. It depends on the circumstance. And I would advise any athlete who is making a decision based on, with that as a primary factor, with NIL income as a primary factor, and that would be a large percentage of the athletes, to get it in writing. It's not that it's impossible to recover if it's a promise, just a verbal promise, but if you have it in writing, it's a lot easier to enforce. There are lots of things that happen with college athletes that they're not well prepared for and that the schools generally aren't doing a good enough job preparing them for. Financial literacy. If you're going to get six, seven figures now, you should have an idea what to do with that money beyond going out and buying the biggest car you can. That's money in the case of people who get seven figures, you could set yourself up for life on that.
Yeah.
Literally.
You could also blow it all and end up with nothing and never get another chance.
Absolutely. Yep. But colleges and high schools have always done a poor job, generally, of teaching financial literacy. And in those cases, it affects everybody. But for those who are handed, or I shouldn't say handed, who are presented a significant amount of money when they're very young, it's very important that they understand what that can do for them if they're smart with it. But in generally, they don't. And it's in regards to the semesters and the transfer portal. Look, the colleges can allow the athlete to continue to compete if they wish. I mean, we've seen that at a few schools. I get the impression, although it's never been publicly stated, that Penn State felt like if Bo was half out, then he was all out. And that's okay, too. You're making a decision based on what you think is best for your program, and Bo is making the decision based on what he has to do for his future, especially with everyone now aware that Drew is coming back. Drew Aller is coming back for his final season of eligibility, or another season of eligibility, I should say. That knowledge puts Bo as a backup when there are lots of schools out there that would, A, employ him at starting quarterback and give him the chance to show what he can do and have the fun that's available to that player, and also earn a significant amount of money doing that.
We're talking to Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. Mike, to go a little bit more directed or you know, smaller picture with Penn State, their college football quarterfinal tonight with Boise State, what chance do you give Penn State of winning, and what do you think might be a key in the victory for the Nittany Lions if they're able to do that?
Yeah, I think they should win. They are superior at most positions. I would say running back is clearly not one. Ashton Jeanty is an amazing player, and I think if they can slow him down, and we've seen it done. We saw Penn State do it to Herschel Walker back in the day. We saw Pitt do it to Herschel Walker back in the day. So you can slow down a phenomenal running back. You're not going to do it every time. So it's up to you to get that done. And if you can do that, you should be able to control the game. You can't turn the ball over. They did not against SMU. They forced them regularly against SMU, and they were very successful in that game. But they're a superior team on both sides of the ball, with the exception of that running game. And they're going to have to control Jeanty in order to advance. But I expect that that's what will happen.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough assignment. The one thing I'll say, even though I think Boise State does have the advantage in terms of the runner, I think Penn State's combination is pretty good. And I also think Boise State, we were looking at some of the metrics, and there's so many metrics, Mike. You can make a case for everything here. But they don't tackle very well. Penn State could actually get the ball and keep it for a long period of time and make it more difficult for Ashton Jeanty to get moving. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I think we saw in the SMU game how good Aller can be when he's given the opportunity to I don't know, I don't want to say cut loose, because they don't really do that at Penn State, but just to contribute more. He's a terrific talent, and he's got a lot to offer. And so I would caution against worrying about keeping Boise's offense off the field and go more about, okay, what's going to work to score points for us? I think that's been a problem for the Steelers. They've been more worried about keeping the other team's offense off the field than they have been about what's going to work to score points for them. And so I like Aller a lot. I like his use of the tight ends. That's really helped their offense work. They've gotten more creative with that. And I think that impetus toward creativity needs to continue for as long as they're alive in this playoff, because that's what's gotten them beaten in the bigger games, like the Ohio State game. That's what's hurt them, is the lack of creativity and trying to be too conservative, worrying about what could happen if it goes wrong. What's gone wrong for them is they just, they've gotten bottled up in too many big games. And so I like the creative element that they've introduced with Tyler Warren and all the different ways they use him. And I would not be at all surprised, given the time in between games, if they throw a few new wrinkles out there with him.
One final question for you, Mike, and I appreciate your time here today. And this is college basketball, one of your specialties for sure. Now, how Pitt is 10-2. It's their best start under Jeff Capel. They have, I think, pretty good, if not superior, guard play to just about every team, not all, but every team in the ACC. How deep can they go? And is this a year that maybe Pitt basketball will kind of resurface as it was under Jamie Dixon and before him Ben Howland? Not maybe to the degree of being a number one seed, but being a factor.
Yeah, it's trending in that direction for sure. We've seen them play and beat some significant teams. I've got them seeded number 5 in my bracket for Fox Sports. They have played well enough to earn that. It's not going to be easy to hold that because the ACC has not been impressive through the first 2 months of the season. I know that's a common refrain that has been a lament over the last few years, that so much goes on November and December. But non-conference performance of the league has been poor. So Pitt has to excel in the league. I don't want to use the word dominate. I think that's the word you'd use if you're trying to play for a one seed like Duke would be. Duke wants to be a one seed. They're going to have to dominate the league. Win all but one or two games. But if Pitt can go through with four or five losses in the league, finish a strong second or third, and I'm not saying they can't win it. I mean, I'm just saying that that's a realistic proposal and goal for them. And if they can do that, I think they can be right there, like I said, in that four or five seed range when we get to March. That's a pretty successful season.
All right, Mike, appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. I know you're passionate about all of this, and I'll be anxious to see these games starting tonight and into tomorrow as well. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Mike.
Bob and Jason, it's my pleasure. Happy New Year. Thanks, guys.
Happy New Year to you. That's Mike DeCourcy. You can follow him at TSN Mike. He does really good work for the Sporting News, of course, but also on the Big Ten Network. And when it comes to basketball, he is deeply entrenched in what goes on there. So he has Pitt as a fifth seed. Would you agree with that? I mean, that's a pretty good team. They're missing Damian Dunn. When he comes back, it's a better team.
Yeah. I mean, the guard play, that's the reason I would agree with it, Pomp. I mean, they have been so impressive. If this continues through ACC play, I feel like a five seed can be a little bit low based on what the ACC can be, what those guys have done. Anyway, yes, I'm right there with the optimism, Pitt basketball.
And it starts tomorrow in conference here. Well, they've already, as far as conference at home on New Year's Day, it starts. And
again,
it is
the
Cal.
Traditional ACC matchup.
Yeah, they got to travel a long way on New Year's Eve to get here. and Pitt will try to win that game. They've had some really good games. Beat Ohio State on the road. I thought the Mississippi State game was just, they were overpowered there. And that's the one thing that would concern me. Their inside game. Guard play is guard play. It's very elite when it's on. But
yeah,
in a tournament, if you don't start making plays and you don't get rebounds and things of that nature, you can be in for a long night.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be a lot better inside. It's been kind of inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Corn, when he's been good. Guillermo Diaz-Graham. The fifth man, I'm blanking on. Help me out.
Zach Austin.
Thank you. I mean, Austin has stepped in at times,
right.
But that has not found its level. As good as the guard play has been, and Damian Dunn's going to be big getting him back, first week of January,
yeah.
Something like that, if I'm not mistaken. If you can combine that with a little bit more consistency down low, that's the key for me.
Did you guys see the scary incident with Bob Carrington, by the way?
No.
So I guess he hit his head on the court last night and had to be taken off in a wheelchair. So Scary scene for
me. So he went up and lost his balance or someone hit him? And
I did not see the play. I just saw the headline that he was taken off the court in a wheelchair and apparently it was from hitting his head. So hopefully it's not anything as serious as it initially looked.
Those guys have leaping ability that's off the charts. And when you go airborne and you have no way of preparing for what, coming down on your head, there's nothing to stop you from that. And I've seen that with a lot of guys. I haven't seen a wheelchair being used. Hopefully he's okay. A lottery pick for Pitt. We haven't had one of those in quite some time, huh? And who knows? Maybe there's more
since
on the way.
Since maybe, was it Adams? Probably was the prior lottery.
Was he in the lottery pick? I wish he would have stayed here for another year or two, but I know he didn't. I thought Jamie, that's the one mistake I thought Jamie made when he was here, not to go back and open up old.
Relitigate yeah, Stephen
but,
Adams.
But I mean, I would have used him a lot more in his freshman season.
Yeah.
I would have, because he was just so big.
You got to get the most out of those one and done guys the one year you have them.
All right, 412-928-9370 is the number to call. We have Pitt and Cal tomorrow right here on your home of Panther Sports. It's 93.7 The Fan. It's a 1:30 pregame, 2 o'clock tip-off from the Peterson Event Center. When we come back, we'll switch back to the Steelers, talk about specifics in this game with Cincinnati and, maybe how far the Steelers can go. And if they don't, what happens next? It's all coming up right here on the Pomp and Joe Show with Jason Mackey sitting in today for Joe Starkey on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. We're back with more. Bob Pompiani, flanked by Jason Mackey today. Jason in for Joe Starkey, who's enjoying a day off. Got some Twitter stuff going on. You can hit us up. Is yours just strictly at Jason Mackey, Jason?
At J Mackey PG.
J Mackey PG. Well, mine is at KD Pomp. There's always a trick involved with these things, and the underscore always screws me up. When I see that, then I don't know how to respond to it because it never shows up. Anyway, we go to our Twitter bag, and we see a lot of interesting takes here. Jeffrey Teverbutt says, on your topic for MVP, Barkley should get it. So back in the 80s and 90s, running backs were celebrated for getting 1,000 yards, tops had a series of special cards. Now we devalue anyone over 1,000, but he's over 2,000. Then you have Dan Miller, who says, nobody cares about MVP other than football teams. And what are we doing here with this team? Which leads us to our next comment. And I assume he's talking
about... Nobody cares about MVPs. Yeah, you're definitely.
Other football teams, what are we doing here? He wants to know what we're doing here, so we'll talk about what we're doing here. We got the Steelers in a funk, 0-3 in this three-game stretch. I knew, and I think you probably had the same feeling, Jason, that at the beginning of this season, they had an opportunity to, you know, make a pretty good run to start the season, take advantage of a weaker schedule, and they did. They got off to 10-3. We knew about those three games, but I don't know if you thought they're going to lose all three. I was thinking 1-2 at the time would be good. That's back at the beginning. When they became 10-3, I thought it was feasible to think they could win two of those three. But to go 0-3 and the way they've done it, which, you know, breakdowns defensively all over the place, guys running over, finger pointing ensues. Not a good look for a defense that is supposed to be the strength of this team.
Yeah, I think context matters here, Bob. Again, if you would say the Steelers are 10-6 at the beginning of the season, I don't think anybody would have been upset at that. Mm-mm. But it's based on how the journey has gone. This team showed us more. We adjusted expectations. The offense showed us more, and it went away. I don't think anybody prior to this season would have said George Pickens is that important. I mean, you know he's important. You know he's a good player. But you don't realize that the entire operation's basically crumbles to you know what if they don't have him. And it exposed, I think, a season-long search for the number two wide receiver. They didn't get that done. The offensive line started well, and then at the worst possible time, that group crumbled. The defense is obviously a separate discussion, but I look at, you know, one of those three games, they should have been able to pull something out. If you go 1-2, I don't think the vitriol is there. You know, if you lose the first two and you're able to handle Baltimore, or the Chiefs on Christmas, excuse me, I mean, that gets you out of it. All you got to do is win one of those three games. And, yeah, I think because of the context and, you know, the defense, the communication issues, guys running wide open. I mean, why is Justin Watson, no offense, Justin Watson, what a good dude and a good family, but, like, he shouldn't be catching 50-yard passes on you. You know, it's just tight end should not be all alone in the end zone with defensive backs looking at each other confused. That doesn't make sense.
No, and that happened in the Baltimore game with Mark Andrews. That happened with Travis Kelce, who can't run anywhere near the way he used to run, but somehow
he can catch a ball and there's nobody within 10 yards of him.
It makes no sense, and that has to change. There's no question about it. That has to change. On the offensive side, a lot of debate already, and people like to, you know, sometimes I believe it's best just to let it play out and make a decision afterwards. And I maintain that when you're talking about a position as important as quarterback. Because you don't, you know, when Justin Fields is 4-2, people want to sign him. How much can you get him? 6 years, $150 million. Now, all of a sudden, that may change. Russell Wilson starts with a bang. All of a sudden, you're going to sign him for another. But age matters in this. Performance in critical games matters in this. Statistics, specifically metrics when it comes to quarterback play, matters in this. I look at this quarterback situation as still very much in flux and very much up in the air. I'm not sure what they are going to do, to be honest. I don't know they know what they're going to do at this point.
Bob, you can't tell people to not react midstream. We're going to be out of jobs.
No, I understand, but but you also can sound, if you look back, how many people wanted Justin Fields to be signed right then and there?
I know.
And I don't know. That still may be the right call.
Yeah, I mean, that's been happening for longer than I've been on this earth, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, we don't know. We need a season's worth of information. We've seen a lot of good with Russ. We've seen some bad with Russ. I don't know where this is going to end.
Age factors into this.
I mean, we could take this discussion bigger, and I think you need to look at the entire Steelers season this way. Like, right now, people are screaming, blow this up, fire Mike Tomlin, trade everybody, it's all terrible. If you win a playoff game, is it going to be the same sort of sentiment? Maybe not. Maybe not on the inside. I think that's going to let some people breathe easier. Certainly, if you go on a run, it's going to change things. But as it pertains to Russ, I want to see what he can do with Pickens now for a little bit of time. I mean, obviously, you're only guaranteed two games. But are they able to conjure up what they had earlier this season, or was that a mirage? You know, when you've got no excuse of a defense. I mean that on the Steelers side. The Bengals are not good in the secondary. If nothing else, the Steelers should be able to move the ball through the air and you can see what you have in the passing game and then make an informed decision. But yeah, it's, you got to wait. It's just tough.
No, it is, but you may also have to just figure out the entire position and go to the draft if necessary, but I don't know if they're going to be in a position to do that.
You also have to know what Russ wants. Like, we're saying this from the outside, saying, you know, oh, this amount of money, these years, these dollars, we don't know. You know, if Russ says, hey, I like it here, my wife's rich, you know, I want to finish my career here, I feel like I can win, you know, he's not going to be this overt saying it, but I'm like, you know, if it comes out for 3 years and $45 million, somebody on the outside's probably like, yeah, that's a great deal. But $100 million over three, you're probably saying that's overrated. We just don't know where Russ's line is. Right.
Well, I do know what he said earlier, that he thinks he can play till 45. That was way back in the preseason. And
I don't know about that.
No. I just look at examples like Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, and I need to know that age and father time doesn't lose too much. You know, you get to a certain point, and it's just difficult. That's no disrespect to him. I think he has been a professional quarterback who has made a difference on this team right now, but how many more years can you expect that? Or if I threw this at you, Justin Fields is 25, soon to be 26, I think, if I'm right, in a different situation other than Chicago, which was a revolving door of head coaches and coordinators, and I think they are doing to him what they're doing right now to Caleb Williams, which is screwing him up.
Yep.
Now in a different system, it changes, and I think we've seen progress. How much more progress can you see, and are you willing to bet that you could take it to another level and he becomes the quarterback of the future?
I'm not willing to make that bet. If you ask me, am I going to take Justin Fields or Russell Wilson, I'm taking Russ.
If the money's what you suggest, over $100 million?
Oh, no, not for $100 million. No, if it was $100 million, if Russ wanted $100 million 3 years, I'd tell him, thank you very much, appreciate your service, we're going another. At that point, I would look at Justin Fields. I'm saying if the money is reasonable with Russ, and maybe not 15 per, I'm just saying, you know, somewhere between those two numbers, I'm probably leaning toward Russ. I think there's more. I don't think he's washed. I don't think this season has been an accurate representation of what he can do, meaning like the offensive line has struggled at times, Pickens going down. I don't think Artie Smith has had the best year play calling. I mean, Russ has not been without blame as well. I mean, he's held onto the ball too long. Mm-hmm. The mobility isn't what it once was. There have been too many turnovers lately. I get all that. They're not an adequate number two wide receiver. Like, that's not on Russell Wilson. That's not even on Arthur Smith or Mike Tomlin. That's on Omar Khan. I don't think we've got the fullest picture of Russell Wilson, and if the numbers are reasonable, again, I've seen enough with the intangibles and what he brings to this offense, the level at which he's able to operate, and frankly, Pomp, what else is out there? Where else they could go? Yeah, you could go in the draft, but that's going to compromise your development or depth at another position. I would rather see them go defensive line, wide receiver, running back, something like that in the draft and not have to go with the quarterback, because frankly, I don't like this class of quarterbacks all that much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what you're going to get in the quarterback department. I mean, I look at Jaden Daniels, and I see a guy who just is so poised, handles it beautifully. Then I look back over the years of so many busts, the Trey Lance. You know, I bring this up because last night watching Brock Purdy, and they're talking about money for Brock Purdy. A lot of people are anti-big money for him only because of where he was a Mr. Irrelevant. He was all the way down. It was Trey Lance that year who was supposed to, and then they gave a lot up to get that position. Total bust, hasn't played at all, even with Dallas, which is surprising. I thought he might get some sort of chance there. Now, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, and you can speculate all you want. You can have all the information and intel you want. You don't know. You brought up something there with Arthur Smith. I would like to see more variety. It seems to me like even, you know, from Matt Canada, his presence was immediately welcome. Like, okay, this is different. But now it's gotten kind of stale to me. There are a lot of boundary passes. We don't utilize, and I've been saying middle of the field all year, and I believe it. I watch enough football. I'm sure you do too, and our callers do. You see guys doing cross, different kind of Detroit's probably the upper echelon team with Ben Johnson as their coordinator, coming up with things that, man, just keep everyone engaged and on their toes on a defense.
Pump, I think that's a way, too, of, one, protecting against a young offensive line, get the ball out of there quick. I don't know whether it's not possible with Russell Wilson because of his height, not possible with the Steelers because of their wideouts. Either way, I mean, that is a vastly underutilized schematic thing. I'm glad I'm like pointing at you and cheering as you say Detroit. That's exactly who I think of. Somebody running these choice routes, pick routes, you know, use scheme, set picks for guys, mm-hmm. and create open space.
They scored a touchdown on a hook and lateral last night, and it wasn't like an end of game scenario.
No.
They did it, you know, just regular play.
St. Brown.
But I'm not even talking
to
about
Williams, and it was just executed beautifully. But they did that earlier this year too, so they haven't. It's not like it was a new thing for them,
right?
They've utilized that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, instead we're looking at first down, run straight ahead between the tackles. Second down, run straight ahead between the tackles. Third and eight. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen now. You have to go max protect with your quarterback. You're trying to throw a moon ball. If your offensive line isn't blocking anybody, which Dan Moore hasn't really done of late.
Leads the NFL in sacks allowed.
Yeah. And down goes Russ, and they punt. Like, this is not a complicated formula. How about what you're talking about on first and second down, Pomp? Some crossing routes, some misdirection, that sort of stuff. If you get the third down, maybe it's third and two. A little more manageable.
The other thing is Arthur Smith came as a big proponent of tight end play, and yet I don't know that I've seen enough development or targets, first of all, to Freiermuth. To me, he's pretty sure-handed. I know he fumbled in the last game, but, I mean, you throw him the ball, he's normally going to catch it. I would expect him to get more targets. It has happened, I guess, of late, but it should be even more throughout the course of the year. And I don't know who else has developed in that. You know, they have Connor Hayward, who is just sort of lost in there. I never really see him involved. Darnell Washington was targeted a few times. That's dropped off.
Yeah.
Michael Pruitt is the guy who's getting most of the activity in there. And I don't know. It just seems to me that I expected more that game plan.
I mean, you're right, Pomp. And you know what I think about with Arthur Smith and a lot of coaches? This goes across sports, really. If you're an offensive coach or a coach in general, you should be able to bring the most out of your play. You should be able to help those guys reach a level of production that they didn't think they could get. You can bring the most. That has not come close to happening with the Steelers. It's gone the opposite direction. A lot of guys have shown previously that they're better, and they've regressed. I mean, I'm not saying that's reason enough to fire Arthur Smith. It's not. But I don't look at this year for him and what he's done and say it's a smashing success. I mean, I'd give him maybe a C. Maybe C minus, something like that. I mean, they're scoring more points. I get that. I just don't think it's been, you know, nearly as good as I hoped.
Well, they're going to have to score more points this week. Again, they did in Cincinnati when they got 44. You may need that because Burrow's going to light it up. I don't think there's any way to totally stop that dude. We'll talk more about that coming up. We'll also expand the conversation to the Penguins. At what time is Matt coming on?
1 o'clock. Yep.
Matt Venzel of the Post-Gazette. We have a lot more in store for you. Call us at 412-928-9370. Also, listen to Starkey's show here every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 p.m. at 937thefan.com contesting page. And yesterday, of course, we had the Mike Tomlin press conference. It's supposed to be on Tuesdays, but when they play on Saturdays, it becomes Mondays. When the game's not on Sunday, it's Saturday, Monday to Tuesday, Tuesday to Monday. So it's brought to you by your local Parmar stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmar store near you, there will be soon. We're going to take a break. We have an update coming up from Seth Meyers. More calls on the way at 412-928-9370. Pomp and Joe Show with Jason Mackey in studio today continues right after this. Bob Pompiani back with you with Jason Mackey today. Joe Starkey is out. He'll be back later in the week. 412-928-9370 is another busy week. Steelers and Bengals on Saturday. Tonight, it's Penn State, Boise State. You also got the Penguins involved. We'll get into them a little bit later. But, Jason, we got some people on the line. Let's get to it and see what they have to say, beginning with Seth, who's on line one. Hey, Seth, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Good morning. Hope all is well. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thanks for taking the call. Bob, you touched on something earlier about the running backs. And, you know, I've had this question for a bunch of years now. Why did the Steelers let, you know, Connor go, right? It doesn't make sense to me because the Cardinals signed him for two more years. And, you know, that was one thing. And of course, the other thing that I was thinking about, and I've been saying this to Austin the last few days, is that I truly believe that Russell Wilson is not the man. And I'd love to see that Justin Fields get his shot. In Chicago, I think they totally screwed him up, and I'd love to see him be the long-term guy here. Get him a quarterback's coach that knows what he's doing. You look at Key Martin over the last few years has helped Lamar Jackson infinitely. So that's my and the defense has to improve significantly. So that's, you know, your thoughts on all that.
Seth, I want to ask you about Justin Fields, and I'm not questioning. I certainly understand people who feel this way, but what leads you to believe that Justin Fields would be a better option than Russell Wilson?
So he's got the skill set. He's got the legs. I think he's a pretty sharp guy. He put up with a tremendous amount of I read so many articles, put up with a tremendous amount of abuse in Chicago from his coaches. I think he's mentally tough. You know, he hasn't said a word since he got benched after going 4-2. I think he's got what it takes. And I'm just kind of surprised that Tomlin, you know, and again, it's or Arthur Smith. I have a big problem with Arthur Smith. That's a whole other topic. But
you might have to get in line for that one, Seth.
Yeah, so I just think he's got the goods, you know. And I think, like you said, Jason, what you gave him a C minus, Arthur Smith. I mean, it's. I've seen this movie so many times, going in, running first down, second down, whether it's Najee, Jalen. How about being imaginative and creating some downfield excitement, crossing patterns? I watched so many other games, and you watch these teams, they score so easily. The Steelers always make it look like it's so hard, right?
It's like getting a root canal.
Oh, don't remind me, man. The clock is ticking.
And good luck. Yeah, good luck with that later on, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll have a report on Thursday. I'm in this shift with Austin. I might be coming in here crying, but all right.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, I would have no problem if they decide that Justin Fields is their, you know, long-term answer, or at least short-term, long-term answer over, you know, an older Russell Wilson. If they believe. And I've seen strides. I've seen things from him that I like. Still, decision-making's got to get better. And maybe it's just a function of time, Jason. I don't know how much that plays into this, but if they believe he has what it takes to be that person, I wouldn't be against it.
Would they tip their hand? This is just a
total... He's a free agent, too.
Well, no, I mean, like, Saturday night against Cincinnati, let's say there's nothing to play for in the second half of that game. Do you give Justin Fields... Well, I guess assuming he's healthy... I was going to say, do you give him some reps?
He should be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought. And if you're not thinking about Fields, you're probably going to have Russ play that game. I would think not a whole half. I don't know. Maybe we're probably reading too much into that. But Seth brought up a good point that I did kind of overlook earlier, Pomp, and that is how he's handled this demotion. I love that. I love everything about the way Fields has talked, the way he's worked, he's put his head down. You can see it on Hard Knocks. Those of us who are over at the facility watching them practice, Justin Fields is always next to Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is always next to Justin Fields. Like, it's not fake. There's no attitude there. Justin is realizing exactly the way this can help him. I'm going to saddle up next to a quarterback who's done this for a long time, who's really giving with his time. And I give Fields a lot of credit. I just think there's more in there with Russ.
I also think, though, that he's getting those mental reps by watching someone at work who's been through this. I think it'd help him. I think the answer is undetermined at this point. What they do moving forward, a lot of things come into play, including how much money Russell Wilson. If you want to sign him, how much will that look like? Let's go to George in North Carolina, who joins us on line two. Hello, George.
Hey there, I gotta get some pizza to
George.
Okay.
What do you want for lunch?
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm in here ordering food.
What do you want for us? Get us. We're both hungry.
I'm getting roast beef on wheat. Y'all guys eat wheat bread?
I will if it's free. what restaurant are we talking? Are you ordering
in
your kitchen?
North Carolina.
I'm in North Carolina, so it'll be 6 hours before I get to you, but don't worry about it.
That's Uber Eats, basically, so let's go. What's up, George?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I had a couple of different things. I respond back to the Justin Fields thing first because I just heard you talk about it. I don't think you want to bring in Justin Fields and pay him much money because I think points come out of the passing game, and he struggled there. I mean, and I think even when we see him make plays, when they bring him in short spurts, we're always surprised he has to make those plays because we know exactly what he can do. So, like, when he made a short run against, I think it was Cincinnati, it's like, how can they even give that up? Because we know exactly who he is and what he's doing. So it just surprised us when he's able to make plays when they should know how one-dimensional he is. So – I wouldn't pay him. I'd pay Russell still three years.
Really? How much money would you pay him? I mean,
I pay him 3 years, $120 million maybe, with 2 years guaranteed or 1.5 years guaranteed. I mean, you don't have anybody, but you have to have a quarterback, right? You have to have a quarterback. And Justin Fields not the end. He's been in the league, 4 years?
And yeah, but again, he's been through four different offensive coordinators and four head coaches, basically.
Why? Be better.
Don't you think that affects? You think Caleb Williams is benefiting with Matt Eberflus? Before he got hurt him.
Some of that reason you keep changing coordinators is because you're not able to perform at the level, right? Because a lot of quarterbacks come in, and they are so good, or they can adapt and they can kind of be okay despite not great offensive coordinator play. Because I don't think Russ can get. I don't think they're getting it here. I don't think we can get great OC play. I think it's fine, but I don't think it's great.
All right.
You're totally relying on OC. I'm not paying you $40 million a year.
Well, I think you're not relying on it. One's not relying on
the other
at all time. I mean, you have to complement one another. I mean, George's point is that there are quarterbacks all around the NFL immediately jumping to the league and experiencing great success right away. They're not.
No, only a chosen few.
It's an epidemic the other way, Bob. I feel like they too many teams, because of salary cap constraints and you're trying to save money, you're throwing these guys to the wolves, basically, you know, and putting them in the care of poor coordinators. For the Jaden Daniels situation that exists in Washington, there are so many Caleb Williams, Justin Fields sort of
Trey Lance.
Look at Sam Darnold.
Right. How many teams has he been through?
Right.
How about Baker Mayfield?
It doesn't click right away with guys. No. I'm a big proponent of a quarterback should sit for a year. You should have a redshirt season. I don't think we'll ever see the league go back to that because of contracts and trying to maximize those, you know, years where they're not high earners and what the top end of that earnings is. But my goodness, I don't think it's the best thing for guys' development.
No.
I don't blame Justin Fields for that.
No, and I think he's been affected by it, but I think he also can benefit by having more consistency in his life. And I think he's young enough where he can take the next step. As you know, the examples we cited, there are more of them too. Guys who've been around for a while, and all of a sudden it clicks a little later in their careers.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a tough one to answer too, because I think the point that was brought up about the downfield passing game and how effectively Justin Fields did that, I think, is a good one. I mean, that's a question that I have. Can he throw downfield enough to make good use of George Pickens or anybody else? They need to have a downfield threat. They do, and I don't know.
I think he has a good arm.
He has a good arm. That doesn't necessarily mean he's a good downfield passer.
I'm not going to rule out that he can never do it. It just takes some time. I would hate to see them he decides to leave because he's not going to be the guy here, and then all of a sudden it blossoms next year or the year after someplace,
sure,
and you think you had him here. You know, you could have made that. I don't think people thought Lamar Jackson was going to be the player he was when he first got there after he fell. When is he in the draft? He was late in the first round, right? I don't know where he was, but.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Did the Steelers have a chance to take him, by the way, on that year? Seth, can you see that? Something tells me that they could have if they wanted to, and I'm not sure how that coincided with Ben Roethlisberger's end of his career or where it was at the time, but Lamar Jackson was not a top 15 pick, was he? I think he was late first round because a lot of people had doubts.
He was the last pick of the first round.
Who did the Steelers pick then ahead of him?
Terrell Edmonds.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine if that happened with the Pirates? How much they'd be getting killed over that?
Wait a minute. So Terrell Edmonds was the pick. What year was that?
2018.
Okay, so we're getting to the end of Ben's career. They're looking for people here who could maybe be the successor, and they had a chance, and they did not take him.
Well, I don't think he handled Mason Rudolph coming in too well, so maybe they learned it wasn't worthwhile to get a quarterback.
Yeah, but again, to our point to the caller previously, you just don't know about some of these guys and how long or how quickly they'll adjust. And that's an interesting situation. One more call before we go to break here because we're running up against the hour here. Harvey is in the car, and now he's on 93.7 The Fan. Hey, Harvey.
Hey, Happy New Year, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I like the comments about the coaching staffs, but it's not about the calling of plays. It's about the development of players and schemes. We had a tremendous defensive coordinator that we had last year that we just let walk away, and I can't understand why that the Rooneys or Tomlin would have allowed that to happen. He took a sideways move to go to the Vikings, and we could have had him scheming it up.
No, it wasn't a sideways move. It was a defensive coordinator job that he did not have here. But he could have if Mike Tomlin wanted to make a change. He certainly could have.
Exactly, Bob, exactly. There's been so many mismanagement things, and I really think it starts up top with Mr. Rooney. It's all about the brand, it seems, these days. You know, the thought of having three Hall of Fame coaches over 50 years seems to be more important to the Rooneys than winning anymore. It's terrible. It's sad. There's always the comments about the play calling. Our offensive line should be playing roller derby. They have skates on. It's ridiculous.
All right, Harvey, we're up against the break, but thank you for the call. Go ahead, Jason, before we get to the business at hand.
No, I mean, I didn't have much to add other than that was an entertaining comment about roller derby, and I was picturing NFL players playing roller derby. I'm not sure that's productive.
Well, you know, the bottom line is development is big. I mean, in all sports, we can talk about the Pirates all we want about that and how if you're going to compete, that's how you have to do it. If they're not going to spend the kind of money that some of these other teams are spending, you've got to do it internally, much like the Baltimore Orioles have done. We're up against the break here. We have a lot of people on the line. We'll continue to roll this over, but we'll open up to just about anything. Pirates, if you want to talk about that, Penguins, Jason and I will open it up for you at 412-928-9370. The 50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And the Fan Hotline is presented to you by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. What about the weather outside? It looks gloomy as we look out the window here. It's brought to you by Sun Chevrolet, 0% financing on all 2024 Chevrolet EV models, up to 60 months through January 3rd with credit through GMC Financial. Showers today. That's coming up a little later. I don't know what's going to happen now. I hope not. Because when we're done, I got some things I got to do, and I need outdoor,
Got some yard work, pump.
Yeah, things I got to get done, and I don't want to be rained on. But it looks like showers are moving in. Possible thunderstorm. High of 51, and then we tank. And Jason, by game day on Saturday, it's going to be in the 20s for the highs, teens for the lows. That's all brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. We have a Seth Meyers headline coming up. More calls on the way at 412-928.